This is Audible.
Harley Merlin and the Secret Coven. Written by Bella Forrest. Narrated by Amanda Ronconi. Prologue. I froze. My back against the window. My whole body shivering as the beast in front of me shuddered with delight. Another second and I would become its dinner. Something inside me roared like thunder, unwilling to give in yet. The air around me thickened. I could feel it tickling my fingertips, beckoning me to wield it. I'd done it before, though not with the strength I would need to disable a fiend as savage as this, but I had to try. There was no other choice. I summoned all the energy I could muster, and for the first time ever I sensed the particles of chaos flowing through me. My mind went into overdrive, and I thrust my hands out. The winds outside listened, rumbling and whistling as they crashed through the window. I ducked as broken glass exploded everywhere. Shards cut through the beast's face and eyes, and it hissed from the pain. With no other route to safety, I embraced the winds and leapt onto the windowsill. My breath hitched as I looked down at the sheer drop. And then I closed my eyes, abandoning myself to the air. Chapter 1. My eyes wandered around the poker table. The dealer, a young man in his early 20s, had been fitted into a crisp white shirt and black silk waistcoat, his brown hair slicked back with too much gel. His dexterity as he shuffled the deck made me stare before I went on to check the players. Two women and three men. Three of them had skipped on the Gamblers Anonymous meetings. I could tell from their frayed nerves and shoulder-crushing guilt. It was written all over their faces. The other two, a man in his late 20s and a cute brunette who didn't look a day older than 23, struck me as the coolest cucumbers I'd seen all evening. This was a steady gig I'd gotten my hands on, so I had to do a good job. 3 months in, I'd already gotten 15 people banned for cheating and counting cards. It wasn't an easy profession, though. For most people, anyway. It required a lot of psychology and the study of body language, along with excellent knowledge of the game itself. You had higher chances of success if you were a former cheater, preferably with some Vegas experience. But I had very little experience at all. Then again, I wasn't most people. After betting, it was time for the flop. The dealer displayed three cards in the middle of the dark red velvet table. 7 of clubs, queen of diamonds, and a 5 of spades. Well, we checked our whole hands again. I had nothing to use, but I bet anyway. The casino supplied my betting cash, so it didn't matter if I lost. My prize came in the form of a generous percentage of the cheater's relinquished winnings if I caught colluders at the table, along with my hourly rate. Texas Hold'em was a favorite game choice for collusion, and with the amount of money involved in tonight's game, I knew I'd get some bold players this evening. My instincts were pointing me to the cucumber couple. The other three were already sweating. One was clearly a veteran gambler, at least compared to the rest. With graying hair, salt-and-pepper stubble, and sweat stains on his peach-colored shirt, the man was nervously clicking 2 blue chips between his fingers as he stared at the 3 cards in view. He was going to fold soon. I could feel it in my bones. There was nothing he could do with what he had in his hand and what was on the table. With 5 crappy cards combined and just 2 more to go with the turn and the river, he wasn't feeling this round at all. Sure, he had the gambling bug, but he'd probably lost enough over the years to know when to pick his battles. He scoffed and folded. Ha, called it. Who's a smart girl? You're a smart girl. I mentally congratulated myself while my gaze wandered around the table. I was a smart girl. It was the only thing I'd learned from my father. I flipped open my black satin clutch, which I'd matched with my dress, pretending to look for a tissue. I kept a small note in my card wallet. I pulled it out and examined it for a moment.
Harley, I am so sorry for doing this to you. But there is no other way. Stay safe. Stay smart. I love you. Dad.
That note was the only thing my parents had left me with before dropping me off at the orphanage when I was 3. I was bounced around from one foster home to another after that. It was rarely a pretty picture, and my father's advice somehow helped me retain my sanity. Even now, as I glided into adulthood, I kept looking at that note for guidance, whenever a part of me wavered. As a foster kid, I always had to stay safe and stay smart, though the two rarely went hand in hand. When the turn was dealt, I glanced around the poker table again. Each of these people had their stories to tell. They had first names and last names, parents and grandparents, uncles and distant cousins, social security numbers, and student loans. In my twisted view of the world, they existed, while I was just a visitor of sorts, always on the outside looking in. I had no identity, just a name on paper. I rented an apartment in Park West and pinpointed cheaters in a casino for a living. Nobody knew anything about me or my special skills, and I was okay with that.
"I'll raise you 20,
the male cool cucumber said, looking at the equally chilled female across the table. In the eyes of everyone else, they didn't know each other. They were complete strangers exchanging pleasantries during a game of Texas Hold'em, where tens of thousands of dollars were at stake. But I could feel the physical attraction between them. The guy was head over heels in love with her. She was just as crazy about him. There was a familiarity between them, an intense emotion that they couldn't hide from me. That was the downside of being an empath. I felt every emotion as if it were my own. I basically had the hots for both of them, as if we'd been together for years. Ugh. When the river was dealt, I could almost hear the guy's heart thumping out of his chest. His excitement filled me to the brim, and judging by the looks the couple exchanged briefly, unbeknownst to anyone else, they were ready to do some good old-fashioned whipsawing, raising and re-raising each other until they trapped another player in between. And I knew exactly who their target was for this round. The other female, one of the compulsive gamblers. She was nervous, her eyes darting across the five cards now shown on the table. A seven of clubs, a queen of diamonds, a five of clubs, a jack of clubs, and another queen of hearts. My hand was weak. All I could offer was a pair of fives. I folded, clicking my teeth. Maybe next time. I smirked, then leaned back in my seat. As expected, the cucumbers started teasing each other.
I'm thinking it's a good night, the guy said, then tossed a few red chips on the pile gathering in the middle of the table. 30.
Your overconfidence could be your weakness, the girl said, grinning, and raised him another 30, her tongue passing over her pearly white teeth. The tight jade-colored dress she wore was meant to arouse, and based on what I was reading from the guy, she was getting the desired results. I shifted in my chair, slightly uncomfortable with feeling someone else's arousal, but stayed focused nonetheless. The girl's outfit looked expensive. They weren't here to play for pennies.
I'm in, the female gambler replied, tossing her own share of chips worth $30,000, while the fourth player folded, shaking his head.
The cucumbers seemed to ignore the woman and continued taunting each other while the dealer watched, amusement twinkling in his eyes.
Raise you another 30, cucumber girl said, grinning, as the guy bit the inside of his cheek and added more chips to the pile.
You're bluffing, he replied.
30.
The female compulsive gambler frowned, but the energy coming from her echoed confidence. She felt like she had a good hand, a really good hand. My guess was that it had something to do with the queens. She raised them another 30, then narrowed her eyes at her own cards.
I'm not bluffing, the girl said.
She raised an eyebrow and pushed $40,000 worth of chips forward.
Raise.
The guy scoffed, scratching the back of his neck as he contemplated his choices for a couple of seconds. The female gambler, on the other hand, had quickly sunk into despair. I realized then that maybe her hand wasn't all that good. If I wanted to confirm collusion between the cucumbers, I needed the lady to fold so I could then watch the guy fold as well and let the girl win. It seemed like the natural way for it to play out at that point.
Okay, now I'm pissed,
the guy said, and raised her another 20. The female gambler cursed under her breath and folded, nervously counting the chips she had left, while the cucumbers pretended to glower at each other. It was getting a little too dramatic for my taste. Even a non-empath could tell they were slightly over the top. All in, the girl challenged the guy and pushed the rest of her chips into the middle, prompting the others to stare at her in disbelief. The pot was somewhere over $350,000, and it was time for the guy to shake his head in disappointment, then fold. My fingers gripped the edge of the table, my nerves anticipating the moment I'd get my proof of collusion. I knew they were hot for each other in ways no two people meeting for the first time would ever be. He tossed the cards face down, feigning irritation as he gulped down his drink, then motioned for a waiter to bring him another one. Bingo. Once they got away with this, they were going to get more brazen. I wanted them to dig themselves into a hole as deep as possible. The bigger their winnings at the end of the night, the bigger my prize. I straightened my back as the dealer collected the cards and shuffled them, while the girl raked the mountain of chips over to her side of the table. She stacked them quickly into groups of $20,000 between sips of her fruity drink. Personally, I looked forward to watching that smirk get wiped off at the end of the night. It was time to get security to pay attention. I fiddled with my onyx earring, giving the head of security a brief sideways glance. Malcolm, the bouncer, stood at the end of the bar, 10 yards away, pretending to chat with the bartender. He noticed my signal and discreetly brought a hand over his mouth, communicating a message through the tiny mic mounted into one of his cufflinks.
It's showtime, the dealer said.
I shifted my focus back to our table as cards were dealt.
Oh, you have no idea.
Chapter 2. One by one, 4 of the 10 security cameras in the room slowly turned and zoomed in on our table. For good reason, too. We were at the turn of another game, and the cucumbers were busy signaling each other. Had it not been for the guy's stretched nerves and my ability to sense them, the cheaters might have gotten away with it. A mixture of excitement and fear, guilt and desire rumbled through the couple, while the other 3 players were simply hopeful that their luck might turn around. I was getting a little angry at this point. It was bad enough that these people were struggling with an addiction. The cucumbers were literally preying on them, while carrying out their little "we're strangers at the same poker table" charade. I folded, then homed in on the familiarity between them. They'd been doing this for years, and when they thought no one was looking, I could see the longing in their stolen glances. They got off on these thrills. The air changed. I couldn't exactly describe it, but it felt different, as if it were electrically supercharged. A rush of tingles tickled down my spine, and I slowly turned my head to get a better look at the rest of the room. I'd yet to learn how to fully detach myself from what I was feeling as an empath, so I suspected that whatever anxiousness the cucumbers were experiencing, it had passed on to me, too. I settled on a pair of deep, green eyes that belonged to a tall young man, maybe in his early 20s, who took a seat at one of the booths, just 10 feet away from our table. His hair was dark brown, almost black, curled and unruly on the top, and smoothly shortened into a fade on the sides. He wore a navy blue suit, elegant but a little casual, paired with a black shirt, its collar unbuttoned. His facial features were clear-cut, matching his equally sharp gaze. The way he looked at me made my back automatically straighten itself. I wasn't sure what that reaction was all about, but I quickly realized that he was responsible for the sudden flow of energy through the room. The intensity pressuring my shoulders and stomach seemed to radiate from within him. A waitress came for his order, while my table got ready for the river. I caught a glimpse of the cucumbers signaling each other before the girl folded. I had to give them credit. They were making an effort to be inconspicuous.
"Sparkling water with ice and lime, please," the electric dude said.
I couldn't help but turn my head to look at him again. His voice sounded like liquid velvet. And who the hell comes into a casino and orders water?
Coming right up, sir, the waitress replied.
A lot of lime, please, he added, then glanced at me.
Holding my breath, I shifted my focus back to the table. We were going into another round. After the cucumbers had just cleaned out the veteran gambler, he muttered a curse under his breath, then started walking over to the cashier at the other end of the room.
I'm gonna go get some more chips,
the gambler grumbled.
Don't start without me.
The dealer raised his eyebrows at us.
Is everyone okay if we give the gentleman a couple of minutes to rejoin us?
Damn straight.
The cucumber guy grinned, annoyingly overconfident.
I can't wait to clean him out again.
The one thing I hated most about these confident guys was that when it rubbed off on me, I got cocky and made dumb mistakes. Like really stupid, what the hell were you thinking types of mistakes that either got me in trouble or worse, hurt. I watched the waitress return with the electric dude's lime water. He gave her a brief nod, then frowned at the highball glass.
Can I get more lime, please?
He asked, his voice low. The waitress gave him a perky smile and a wink, then rushed to the bar for more lime. She liked him. I knew that for a fact because I was having a hard time taking my eyes off the guy. Damn my empathy. She returned with a small bowl filled with lime wedges at the same time as our veteran gambler, whose energy and hope of getting a better hand filled me up with unwarranted optimism. Nevertheless, my attention was fixed on the electric dude, who stuffed more lime into his glass, turning its contents into an almost limeade. Only then did I notice the rings on his fingers. 10 sterling silver bands, one for each finger. There were inscriptions engraved on all of them, but I couldn't make out the words from where I sat. His gaze found mine, and he lifted a curious eyebrow. My cheeks heated, and I slowly turned back to my table as the dealer started the next game. The strangeness in the air didn't fade away, though. It lingered around me, and I couldn't shake the feeling that I was being watched. Something was off. As the first 3 cards were laid out on the table, I glanced over my shoulder. The electric dude had this look about him, a quiet but bone-rattling charm that reminded me of British rock stars. The tall, dark, and handsome type, not too bulky, but not skinny either, who look good in whatever you make them wear, except skinny jeans. Nobody looks good in skinny jeans. He took out a tablet and absently swiped its screen for a couple of minutes. A tap on my table made me check my hand, then the flop. Once again, my cards were useless. I folded, eager to get back to what my electric rock star was doing. I just couldn't look away, and there was no perky waitress around to blame. I was the curious and interested one. He stilled, slowly putting his tablet down as he looked up and around the room. He seemed to stare at something, and I followed his gaze to the top left corner of the ceiling. I caught a glimpse of something dark slipping into the vent. A long, thick black tail. What the? I figured it could be an oversized rat. But since when do rats scamper across the ceiling? The hint of a bad feeling poked at my stomach, and I exhaled sharply. Maybe I'd imagined it. I checked the booth, and he was gone. Whoever he was weird. Devastatingly handsome, but weird. I looked up at the vent again, but there was nothing there to arouse my suspicion. Miss? The dealer's voice dragged me back into reality. He was talking to the cucumber chick, who pursed her lips, then briefly glanced at her mate. He was pretending to look at his cards, resting his chin in his hand, index finger tapping the tip of his nose. I'd learned by now that it was a signal for a good hand. I'll put in 20, the young woman replied, smirking as she pushed blue chips to the center of the table. A large figure appeared to my right. I would have been startled had I not recognized Malcolm's pale blue eyes and round, bald head. He was big and soft on the outside, kind of like the Michelin man stuffed into an Armani suit, but a damn brute if ever crossed. It's showtime. They'd probably seen enough through the cameras to confirm my suspicions, if they'd decided to send the big guy directly.
A wave of fear and panic hit me like a bucket of ice water, hard bucket included in the toss. The cucumbers were broiling as Malcolm glowered at them. Their faces were pale, beads of sweat blooming at their temples. I had never felt anyone switch from giddy to petrified in just 10 seconds.
You too.
Malcolm nodded at the couple, still separated by 3 gamblers.
I need you to stand up and slowly step away from the table.
Malcolm never ordered anyone to do anything. He used his calm voice to simply tell people what they had to do, without a fuss. Nobody dared challenge him. What he said was going to happen, well, it always happened, with no exception. He told you to stand up, you sprang to your feet, no questions asked. This time, however, it didn't seem to immediately stick.
Is there something wrong, sir?
The cucumber guy asked, his voice a little pitchy, as the girl slowly stood up, gripping the edge of the table as if to stop herself from collapsing. Their world was crashing down on them, and it hurt like hell. My stomach tightened itself into a knot, and my blood went on the race of the century through my veins. I broke into a sweat as my heart skipped a couple of beats. Of course, the legal implications were damning. If caught cheating, players were taken to a back room, where the police would later find them. What happened from the moment they left the table until the police officers got there, however, varied from one establishment to another. Malcolm was big and scary as hell, and this couple seemed to have been through the motions before. Otherwise, they wouldn't be so terrified. What they didn't know was that Malcolm only employed legal methods of detention. No one walked out with bruises or broken bones unless they assaulted someone and security were forced to defend themselves.
I'm not going to ask you again,
Malcolm replied. He hadn't even brought backup with him. To be fair, there were 2 guards stationed by the main entrance anyway. There was nowhere to run. The guy stood and chuckled nervously.
Seriously, what's going on here? What did we do?
He asked, while the girl pressed her lips tight together.
I think you know exactly what's going on,
Malcolm replied dryly. The 3 gamblers stared at each other, then scowled at the couple. The old-timer was particularly pissed off. I could tell from how badly I wanted to shove my fist in the young guy's face as he continued to laugh it off.
No, I don't. I'm just here playing my game. I'm not bothering anyone,
he insisted.
You really don't want to do this here, buddy.
Malcolm was unfazed and nodded at the bouncers from the main entrance. They both walked over and flanked the couple.
We're going to go into the back room now.
Nah, man, I'm not going to no back room.
The guy shook his head, trying hilariously hard to keep his cool. I noticed a yellowish glimmer in his brown eyes, but couldn't quite put my finger on what it was exactly. It could just be reflections from the overhead chandeliers. Fear clamped on my throat and stiffened my muscles. He didn't want to disappear into that back room. I thought I could maybe soothe him a little, tell him that nobody was going to hurt him back there. But that would mean revealing my identity as a casino employee. If I outed myself now, other players would learn about me and my job would be compromised. So I kept my mouth shut and tried to ride it all out.
Relax, buddy,
Malcolm retorted, rolling his eyes.
No one's getting kneecapped tonight. This is a legally compliant establishment, not a mobster movie.
The 2 security guards politely yet firmly nudged them away from their chairs and escorted the couple away as they both voiced their protests.
Wait, my money? What about my money?
The guy cried out.
You'll get your buy-in back, but all your winnings will be returned to the house since you've been cheating your ass off.
Malcolm shot back. It wasn't over, though. The crippling fear didn't leave me. The farther the couple got from me, the lower the intensity of their emotions was supposed to be. That was always the case, no exception. My unique ability was subject to physical distance. And yet I was still terrified. I realized then that I wasn't experiencing the couple's feelings anymore. It was someone else. I glanced around the casino, catching glimpses of curious customers as they watched the couple getting escorted to the other side of the room. The 3 gamblers left at my table were just upset. They felt like idiots, and by extension, so did I. But no one here was afraid. The games we'd played were going to be annulled, and they were going to get their money back. Those were the house rules, where cheaters were involved. At the end of the night, they were going to walk away as the winners, so to speak. Of course, we all knew they were just going to gamble their money away at another table an hour later. But still, it felt like a second chance for them. Malcolm offered a warm smile to the remaining gamblers.
You're free to put your money into another game.
That's how a casino works, after all. They make their money from other people's vices. It wasn't Malcolm's place to preach or to judge. Our key responsibility was to drive revenue. So it was obvious that the fear making me tremble didn't belong to the gamblers. I made brief eye contact with the dealer, who looked away, and it hit me. It was him. The dealer was absently shuffling a deck of cards, but his fear seeped through me. He was involved with the cucumbers. There was a whiff of familiarity that I hadn't caught from him earlier because I'd been too focused on the couple. But how? The couple had only seemed to coordinate with each other during the games. So how had the dealer helped? A thought crossed my mind, and I opened my clutch and took out a pair of small, yellow-lens glasses. I looked through them at his deck of cards and exhaled. They were marked. The yellowish glimmers in the cucumber guy's eyes weren't a chandelier reflection. They were contact lenses, crafted from a material that worked like my special glasses. I quickly took my glasses off, chuckling. I thought I could see better with my glasses, but the light really isn't helping, I murmured, flashing a smile to the other players. I then gave Malcolm a discreet nudge and nodded at the dealer, who was nervously eyeing us both at this point. He caught on. He'd realized what I'd done. The guy was a new employee. Otherwise, he never would have used marked cards on my shift. No one had warned him either. Good.
You, Malcolm said to the dealer. We need to talk. About what?
He replied, his voice barely audible. His enclosed position at the specially designed table made me feel trapped. The dealer could have no access to people near the table during the games to avoid foul play. Hence, he was basically plopped in the middle of it. To get out of there fast, he'd have to jump over the table and crawl to the edge. He didn't give Malcolm a chance to explain, as he did exactly what I'd expected and sprang on top of the table. It was time for more drastic measures. I held my breath, and thousands of cards burst out from the shelves beneath the table. The dealer fell backward, dazed and confused by the flurry of playing cards swarming all around him, like crazed birds in a horror movie. He yelped and cursed as they fluttered frenetically around him, swatting him over the face, defying the laws of physics. Gasps erupted from around the table and the rest of the room as the cards scattered in the air. Malcolm lunged after the dealer, but he rolled over the table, pushing the other players away as he made a run for the main doors. There was no security on that side, and he could easily escape. The two guards were busy with the cheaters, and the others were farther back in the room with not enough time to reach us. I don't think so, I muttered, and set my sights on one of the empty chairs at the last blackjack table by the exit. When I said I wasn't like most people, I wasn't kidding. Empathy wasn't my only unique skill. Telekinesis, over which I had better control, was the second one, though I'd yet to understand its extent, and it often depended on my anger to perform properly. Straight up weirdo. It felt as if I had these invisible tendrils extending from my fingers, and I had to focus them on an object in order for me to take hold and then move it. The dealer had made me angry enough to focus and take control of that chair 20 feet away from me. It slid across the room and tripped the guy. He stumbled and landed flat on his face with a painfully heavy thud. I had a feeling he'd at least sprained something in the process. That a girl. I was still working on improving my telekinetic ability, but I'd managed to move an object to a predetermined location without a fuss. Compared to my earliest attempts when it first began to manifest around the age of 7, I dared to call it progress. Malcolm ran over to the dealer and pushed a knee into his back, prompting him to cry out from the pain. Two other bouncers rushed in from the bar and got the dealer up on his feet.
"Take him to the back room, too,"
Malcolm barked, annoyed whenever he was forced to get athletic in his Armani suit.
"We're pressing charges."
They both nodded and dragged him away. They passed by me, and there it was again, the sheer terror. This guy had been in prison before. He clearly didn't want to go back. But hey, you commit crimes, you pay the price. Malcolm got up as I collected what was left of my poker chips and bid my farewell to the other three players. Two waitresses and a new dealer quickly took over, inviting the players to resume their seats and offering plenty of drinks on the house. It was the least the casino could do after one of its crooked dealers had shoved three of its clients away from the table.
"How did you do that?"
Malcolm reached my side as I walked over to the cashier. "Do what?" It was time to come up with good excuses for my inhuman abilities. Fortunately, I had an entire arsenal of perfectly reasonable explanations. Malcolm was very fond of me, but he was also very curious. This wasn't the first time he'd caught a whiff. My intuition had been a subject of his fascination from the day he'd hired me.
"The cards, Harley," he replied, slightly irritated. "How did you do that?"
"Dude," I chuckled. "I rigged the drawers. It's an old-school carnival trick. I knew he was dirty." Malcolm frowned.
"How did you know that? How did you spot him?"
Digging deeper. Malcolm had worked as a police officer for 10 years before switching to private security. His detective skills had yet to simmer down. "I noticed some signs, Malcolm. Nothing special, trust me," I said. "People are, well, they're people. Their emotions betray them, and you, my friend, are a very intimidating presence. You made the guy nervous. I could tell before we opened the doors tonight. So I employed some good old mechanical tricks with the drawers in case he tried to make a run for it, which he obviously did."
"And the couple? How did you spot them this time?"
"It's my job, Malcolm. I'm not telling you my secrets," I giggled. "It's how I earn my keep." He smirked.
"And the chair?"
He'd saved the best for last. I let out a long, tortured sigh as I returned the chips to the cashier with a friendly wink. She smiled briefly and handed over a receipt, which I slipped into Malcolm's chest pocket. "I have no idea what you're talking about," I replied dryly. "Not my fault that boy has two left legs and can't even run without tripping over random objects."
"The chair slid and..."
He stopped himself, then took a deep breath, closed his eyes for a second, and pinched the bridge of his nose. He was frustrated. We'd been doing the same dance for 3 months now, since I started working here. I caught the cheaters. Sometimes I had to employ my unorthodox methods to stop them from fleeing. Then I had to explain the unexplainable. We'd both then shrug, I'd get paid, and we'd part ways until my next shift. The casino didn't like drilling for information. As long as the cheaters were caught and I got my bonuses, we were all happy. But Malcolm's detective intuition made it hard for him to let go. "So, what's my bonus for tonight?" I grinned, eager to change the subject to what really interested me.
5%, as usual.
Malcolm shook his head, giving me the half-smile that labeled me as incorrigible. "Oh, that's..." I quickly did the math in my head and reached 3 zeros in the upper half of a decimal. "Hell yes, I get to give my Daisy a new paint job. Maybe a new exhaust, too." After a life spent with a handful of personal belongings stashed in a black garbage bag as I was carted off from one foster family to another, I'd recently acquired a car. A raucous, black, 1967 Ford Mustang, in need of improvements and lots of love. I'd named her Daisy, and she was my first purchase as a responsible adult. She was also the birthday present I gave myself upon turning 19. Naturally, I was eager to invest a little bit of cash in her upkeep whenever I got the chance, since the casino job paid pretty well. Most of the bonuses went right into my future college fund, but I did spoil myself and Daisy once in a while. Regardless of what others said, adulting was fun. Malcolm smiled softly.
I've got a good mechanic I can recommend, if you're interested.
I was filled with affection, a gentle warmth I'd always imagined felt like fatherly love. I'd only felt it once before, with Mr. Smith, from my last foster family, the only decent home I was put in. Malcolm was, indeed, very fond of me. I thought of a warm breakfast on the kitchen table whenever he looked at me that way, reminding me of Mr. Smith's maple syrup pancakes and freshly squeezed orange juice. That would be great, thanks. I beamed up at him, then remembered the cucumbers. Just so you know, the couple you guys lifted, they know each other. They didn't think anyone would notice, but you know me. I think they're quite seasoned, too. You might want the cops to check with Nevada casinos.
Good point. Thank you, Harley.
Malcolm gave me an appreciative nod.
They'll get banned anyway, and we'll put out a nationwide alert on their profiles. They didn't show up in our system when they came in.
Yes. Facial recognition cameras. I keep forgetting we have those, I muttered, as I caught a movement at the corner of my eye, then above us. Looking up, the flicker of a shadow in a corner by another vent made me still. I could have sworn I'd just seen that long black tail again. I must be tired.
They'll get arrested, too,
Malcolm replied. I shrugged. Hey, man, that's what happens when you don't keep your nose clean. In retrospect, I could have ended up a lot worse as a foster kid. We were the discarded souls that nobody wanted. Most of the kids in the system ended up in juvenile detention centers, and later on, prison. It wasn't really their fault. Nobody chooses to be a criminal at the age of 12. Your environment pushes you. The lack of involvement from the authorities when you signal abuse from one foster parent, then another, it makes you lose all semblance of hope. The system doesn't believe you, and you grow up distrusting the system in return. Nobody listens to you. Nobody cares. You do what you can to get by. That's how it usually goes down for us kids with black garbage bags. I did good for myself. I stayed out of serious trouble, despite my often troublesome abilities. Of course, the other foster kids didn't grow up with a note from their dad telling them to stay smart and stay safe. As miserable as I was without parents to call my own, I still felt a little lucky to have had that handful of words to guide me. It was better than nothing. Chapter 3. Shortly after the incident, my shift was over. But the night was far from coming to an end, with about a dozen customers left at the poker and blackjack tables. Only one of them was walking away with more money than he'd come in with. The others filled me with a sense of disappointment, and at the same time, hope. The idea that they'd try again next time and maybe beat the house. I wasn't a gambler myself, nor would I ever indulge. Given my ability as an empath, I'd already experienced the thrilling highs and the devastating lows from all the players I'd had to sit next to during my work hours. I could never get over the pit in my stomach after watching someone throw 20 grand right into the dealer's hands. Loss was one emotion I was already familiar with, and it wasn't something I needed more of. On top of that, at 19, I wasn't even legally allowed to gamble. Working there and pretending to be a gambler, however, was a different story, thanks to several legal loopholes that Malcolm had taken advantage of in order to get me on his crew.
"You have to let me set you up on a date with Daniel," Malcolm said with a smile,
watching me as I collected my clutch from the top of the bar, then put my leather jacket on. The jacket was one of my favorites, and I rarely parted with it, especially given these cool early spring nights we've been having lately. "Now, why would you want to do that to your own son, Malcolm?" I grinned.
"He's 19. You're 19. You're a good girl. He's a good boy. You're lonely, and Daniel sure could use a female presence in his life." "I could go on," Malcolm replied, rubbing the back of his neck.
His wife died when Daniel was only 5, so it had been just the two of them for a very long time. Shortly after he became a single dad, Malcolm put the police badge away and started working in security, a slightly safer line of work, since he couldn't put his life at such risk anymore. Not while raising a son, anyway. Malcolm was being truthful, though. Daniel was a good guy, and I'd met him a couple of months earlier. I'd noticed the sweet looks he gave me,
but I didn't think anything of it until Malcolm first suggested a date. This was his third attempt, and it was going to be a no once again. Daniel was sweet and all, but he just wasn't my type. Not that I actually knew what my type was, but something inside me just didn't click with Daniel. Besides, being in a relationship meant I'd have to eventually explain my weird powers, and I was nowhere near ready to have that conversation with anybody. "Sorry, Malcolm, but it's still a no for me," I replied gently, careful not to let him down too hard. "I mean, I'm happy to go out with the both of you since there's so much of San Diego I've yet to experience, despite growing up here. And you guys know all the good burger joints, apparently. But I'm not getting into the dating game anytime soon, and I'd hate to string Daniel along."
"Can't blame an old man for trying."
Malcolm shook his head slowly as the shadow of a smile passed over his face. "See you in a couple of days." I winked, waved him goodbye, and walked out through the back door. I'd parked my Daisy in the far right corner of the employee's parking lot, away from the others, and I could see her from where I was standing as I searched for my keys at the bottom of the clutch. Customers parked their cars on the other side of the building. The casino door closed behind me with a loud click, and my fingers finally clasped around my keys. My stomach seemed a bit upset, as if there was a little monster inside, gnawing away at it. Leftover pizza for dinner it is, then. There were a few other cars in the lot besides my Mustang, including Malcolm's black sedan. I went over to mine, welcoming the cool darkness of midnight. The stars glimmered overhead, in the company of the giant pearl, commonly referred to as the moon. I'd always been captivated by it, especially when it was so big and glowing so close to the earth, though I knew its size was an optical illusion, the horizon tricking my mind and warping reality. A shadow darted across the asphalt before me, but vanished somewhere behind my Daisy before I could see what it was. I ignored the sudden chill and kept moving, keys in hand, eager to sink into a hot bath at home.
"No, please!"
A man yelped somewhere farther down on 55th Street, just where the parking lot ended in its shoddy wooden fence. My heart hammered in my chest. I walked faster, my stilettos clicking across the asphalt as I reached my car.
What are you?"
The same voice grew louder, and I stilled, crippled with horror. But it wasn't my horror. It was his. I squinted into the darkness, but couldn't find the man who had cried out. Maybe he was just some dude who'd snorted too much of that good stuff. But his emotions were far too powerful. I'd experienced drug-induced panics from other people, and none were as intense as the thick sheet of ice constricting my heart in this moment. Besides, my instincts were already telling me to at least find out what was going on, to see if I should call the police. I walked around the car toward the fence. I looked down 55th Street, both ways, but there was nothing to see, other than dim orange lights cast by distant street lamps. "What the..." I muttered, catching movement somewhere to my right, just where the small apartment block started rising, lined with palm trees. The man whose voice I'd just heard emerged from the shadows. He tripped and fell over, just 20 feet away from me and right in the middle of the street. Fear crashed into me in a second, much more brutal wave, paralyzing my muscles. Oh, man, he's scared out of his mind.
"Get away from me,"
he shrieked, then stumbled to his feet and started running again. "Dude, are you okay?" I called out as he got closer. He was pale, paper white almost, his face drenched in sweat, and his crisp Friday night out suit covered in dirt and cuts. He was pretty roughed up, his lips split, and a purplish bruise blaring around his left eye. He stared at me for a second, then exhaled sharply with genuine relief. I felt hope bursting inside my chest. His, as he hoped I would save him. From what, though?
"No, I'm not. You've got to help me call the police,"
he said, his voice trembling.
"I can't see. I can't see who it is or what it is, but it just won't let me be."
Wait, what? I got confused fast. My initial thought of a drug-related trip gone horribly wrong crossed my mind until a shadow flickered across the ground. I looked down and saw the long black tail I'd seen earlier inside the casino.
It lashed out from the shadows to my right and coiled its tip around the man's ankles, sweeping him off his feet.
What?
I didn't manage to finish my thought. The man fell hard on his back, screaming as he got dragged away.
No, no, no.
I dropped my keys and clutch and jumped over the fence, my left heel slipping. Not the best night for stilettos, clearly.
Help!
He cried out. I ran after him, slightly limping from the pain budding in my left ankle. His emotions were toying with my senses, and it took considerable mental effort for me to push it all down so I could focus on what was happening as I followed him. Whatever had latched onto his ankles had a surprisingly long tail. Snake, maybe? No. What kind of snake can do that? A large figure took form in the semi-darkness ahead, with light from a street lamp offering me a better view. My stomach churned, then wriggled itself into a small, painful ball as I came to a halt. This was not a snake, nor was it a man. Whatever this is, it's not human.
Oh, God, help me, please,
the man bellowed, desperately scraping at the asphalt beneath him as he was dragged backward. I tried to catch his hands, his fingers bloodied by his attempts to get away, but I missed him by inches. And then a blood-curdling growl made me freeze in place. The creature taunting the guy came into view, its big, black eyes fixed on me. As it noticed me, it stopped dragging the man, enough for him to look over his shoulder and cry with exasperation,
"What the hell is going on? What is happening to me?"
You can't see it?" I murmured, staring at the horrible beast standing before me.
"See what? There's nothing. Why is this happening?"
It hit me then that the man couldn't see the creature taunting him. I figured it was better that way. He was spared the visual horror. I was standing face to face with some kind of monster. It was huge, at least 8 feet tall, with bulging pitch-black eyes and two long twisted horns that sprouted from either side of a crooked asymmetrical head. Thick strings of drool clung to a pair of enormous fangs, and razor-sharp claws protruded from the ends of its lanky, ape-like limbs. Its skin was leathery, a dark and dirty shade of gray, with spikes erupting from behind its neck. A stringy tail trailed behind it, and judging by the giant bat wings extending from its back, this thing could also fly. It growled again, this time louder, as it continued glaring at me.
"What are you?"
I gasped, my own fear taking hold of my bones and joints, pushing my instincts into survival mode.
"You can see it?"
The man gawked at me, blood trickling from his temple.
"Yeah, but trust me, you don't want to know."
It was a weirdly freakish hybrid, a cross between an ape, an overgrown lizard, and a bat. It was looking way too intensely at me. Claws as big and sharp as the monster's took hold of my heart as it let go of the man and smacked him over the back of his head with its tail. He lost consciousness, and the monster moved over its body, its shadow nearly swallowing him. Every nerve in my body screamed for me to run, but I couldn't leave the man to die. If our situations were reversed, I knew I'd want someone looking out for me. Given the disgusting amount of drool, it was dinner time for the beast, and the dude was its main course.
"Hey, leave him alone," I shouted.
Whatever this creature was, it wasn't interested in meaningful conversation. The monster sneered at me, then shifted its focus back to the guy, its jaws parting with anticipation as it lowered its head for a bite. My fight-or-flight instinct kicked itself into fight mode. I thrust my arms out to help concentrate my telekinetic powers. First, I had to latch onto it. For some reason, I needed a clear view and angle to lasso the target. Fortunately, given how preoccupied the thing was with its meal, that wasn't hard. I curled my fingers,
focusing all my energy into its throat. The creature stilled, then choked as my hold on it tightened. I was panting hard. I'd never performed such a precise grab before, and certainly not with a target this big. Nevertheless, I latched on and pulled the monster away, swinging my arms up as I tossed it over my head. It snarled as it was forced to part with its prey, sailing through the air. My breath stopped as I saw where it was going to land. "My car! Not my car!" I blurted out, then latched onto the creature once more, waving it away from my beloved Daisy. It missed my Mustang by inches and crashed into the fence. Wood splinters flew outward, and the monster groaned from the pain, then lifted its head to glare at me. Its anger flowed through me like lightning. I'd really pissed it off now. The guy behind me came too, and gasped, as all he could see were the creature's claws crushing the asphalt beneath it with each step it took toward me. "Think fast, think fast, think fast." The monster lunged at me, baring its fangs, its black eyes wide and filled with rage. I tried to swat it away again, but it darted to the right. I launched another mental lasso at it, and it jerked to the left. It had already figured out my telekinesis. "Crap," I muttered, desperately trying to think of another way out of this mess.
"What?"
the guy behind me croaked. "Run," I breathed, as the monster veered toward me again. I put my arms out, hoping I could at least nudge it away. But then a flash of fire exploded between us. The blaze pushed me back a couple of feet. It didn't hit me, but it certainly got the monster, forcing it into a rough landing on its back.
"What the hell is going on here?"
the guy cried out. "Why do you keep asking me? How the hell am I supposed to know?" I shot back, genuinely exasperated. It was bad enough that I could see the thing and still had no idea how to stop it. On top of that, I'd just nearly gotten myself blown up somehow. All I wanted was a hot bath and a slice of yesterday's pizza. Was that too much to ask?
"Step aside, miss."
A somewhat familiar voice caught me off guard. Behind me, a young man emerged from the shadows of the residential building next to the casino's parking lot. The deep green eyes, the dark curls resting on his forehead, the smooth, dark blue silk of his suit. It was the electric dude I'd seen earlier during the poker game. The monster grunted, shaking its ginormous head, then looked at us and let out a spine-chilling roar. The electric dude frowned at the creature, pursing his lips as if he were dealing with a smaller-sized nuisance, like a rat, and not the living nightmare slowly getting back up on its hind legs.
You can see it too?"
the guy on the ground asked him. "Seriously, why are you still here?" I rolled my eyes at the wounded stranger, then pointed at the end of the street. "Just run!"
"No. Stay there,"
the electric dude replied, his voice low and eerily calm in spite of the raging monster shuddering in preparation for another attack.
"You're a witness."
"Who are you? And what the hell is this thing?" I managed, trying to wrap my head around the many unknowns that had gotten between me and my leftover pizza dinner.
"I'm Wade. Wade Crowley,"
the electric dude replied. And only then did I catch the hint of an Irish accent he carried.
"And that's a gargoyle."
I stared at him, then at the monster for a couple of seconds, noticing the soot on its horrific face. The fire that had hit it earlier had burned through its thick skin, but hadn't managed to inflict significant damage. What the heck was it made of? "A what now?" I blinked several times, my brain left behind for a moment.
"A gargoyle? Not sure what wasn't clear about that statement."
Wade raised an eyebrow at me, as if I was the idiot, as if I was supposed to just know what that thing was. He made it sound as though gargoyles were as common as sewer rats. "Well, pardon me for not knowing that gargoyles are real and not just creepy statues," I shot back, slightly annoyed. Wade opened his mouth to say something, but the gargoyle's sudden movements made him put his hands up. The 10 rings on his fingers lit up in an incandescent orange. And to my shock, flames burst from his palms, hitting the monster right in the face. The creature yelped and covered its head with its wings, then growled and darted to the side, dissolving into the darkness behind a small building flanked by a jeep just outside the casino's parking lot. The way the light fell over it made it difficult to tell whether the gargoyle was still there.
"Did you kill it?"
I asked, craning my neck to get a better look, as the guy behind me got up and backed away slowly.
"Nope,"
Wade replied, scanning the building. I couldn't stop staring at his rings, which were still glowing a peculiar shade of amber. The gargoyle jumped out and landed on top of the jeep, the hood bending inward under its weight as it snarled at us. It moved too fast for Wade to hit it with fire again, dodging the flaming balls as it zigzagged across the street toward me and the guy on my right.
"Stay down!"
I shouted at him, then tried another telekinetic move on the gargoyle. I managed to smack its shoulder, but didn't stop it, as it took flight and shot right at me. Light flickered across its face, and I ducked as Wade's flames hit it hard. Whatever ability Wade had, it was similar to mine, but he was in much better control of his powers than I could even dream of being with mine. The gargoyle landed on its side, but didn't give Wade a chance to hit it again, and bolted toward me and the guy once more. This creature was really persistent about getting its dinner. I put my hands out and managed to latch onto its right wing. It gave me a panicked look, and I slapped the asphalt in a sudden crouch, as it was the only way for me to bring it down, given its considerable size. I felt like the puppet master in charge of a giant white shark, my muscles straining. Wade watched as I struggled to keep the creature down. I noticed his frown and scoffed.
"A little help here, Wade?"
"I figured since you ignored my request to step aside, and you're continuing to disrupt my operation here, I might as well see what you can do," he replied sarcastically. "Clearly not much."
As much as I hated it, he was right. The gargoyle tossed and turned until it escaped my hold. "Damn it, I need more practice."
"Your operation?" I snapped. "For Pete's sake, help me kill this thing."
"No one's killing anything tonight," Wade replied, then brought his hands up again.
The gargoyle dodged several fire pellets, then decided to deal with the source directly. In three wide jumps, it reached Wade and pounced at him.
"Don't let him get away,"
Wade shouted at me.
"Let who get away?"
I replied, then glanced over my shoulder and saw the wounded guy trying to run off.
"If he gets out there, the gargoyle will go after him before I get a chance to catch it. Keep him here,"
Wade grunted as he tackled the gargoyle with what looked like judo moves.
What in the world is he doing?
Nevertheless, I caught the guy by his sleeve, pulling him back and farther away from the middle of the street where Wade was struggling to get on top of the gargoyle.
"Just stay here. He says it's safer if you don't run. Let him do his thing,"
I said to the guy, then stared at Wade for a couple of seconds. The beast got the upper hand and punched him so hard, Wade flew 20 feet to the right, then slid over the fence and slammed against the passenger door of my car. My heart hurt as I heard the metal dent on impact.
"My baby,"
I gasped as Wade quickly came to and frowned at me.
"Your baby,"
he muttered.
"Oh, geez, not you, my car. Don't scratch my car,"
I shot back. The gargoyle didn't wait for Wade to get up. It rushed at him, and I knew that if I didn't do something quick, my Daisy was going to pay the price. Fueled by fear itself, I sprinted forward and found the strength to clap my hands and do something I hadn't done since I nearly destroyed the shed of my last foster home. The friction of my palms coming together created sparks, and the adrenaline pumping through me provided the energy I needed to generate a thin sheet of fire, which I aimed directly at the gargoyle. Wade froze, his eyes wide as he saw the blaze coming. Just as I'd manipulated the creature earlier with telekinesis, I employed the same arm movements to guide the fire sheet as it slipped right in front of Wade, prompting the gargoyle to come to a grinding halt, its knees scraping the asphalt.
"Ha!"
I cackled, then brought my arms back, as if pulling two ropes, and the fire sheet moved closer toward the gargoyle.